All right, so we're holding on Ayin Amudei's fourth line of the wide lines. We said yesterday that the people of Alexandria asked Rav Yeshua 12 questions, 3 of Chochma, which we said were detailed in Halacha, 3 of Agada, about how Hashem runs the world and deals with people, 3 Divrei Burus, which we said is based on philosophy or based on Pshetlach that aren't necessarily valid in the final analysis according to Torah. And then they asked them Shlosha Divrei Derechel. They asked them 3 things about proper behavior. Number one, they asked, Ma Yasa Odom V'Yachta? What should a person do in order to be smart? On the left hand, so he says to them, Yarba B'Yeshiva, he should spend more time in the yeshiva learning Torah. And he should reduce the amount of time that he spends on business, on buying and selling. Omru, so the people of Alexandria weren't satisfied with that answer. They said, Haugru also came to Lahayalahem. Many people did that and didn't necessarily help them. They sat and learned. They limited their involvement with their business, and they didn't necessarily get any smarter. Ella, said Rabbi Yeshua, tells them, you're right. What it is
you're increasing your business?
Decrease. Well, that's not necessarily true to get stupider, but in other words, the point is, it's going to, you know, we have in Tikkun Yavis, one of the 48 milos, Shatara Niknas Behan, is the mute schor, is a reduction in the amount of...
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If you do both, you increase in schor and you increase in mute.
Then, I guess, I mean, they I mean, I don't know. It's a good question. Part of it, I guess, depends on the question. What of the person's faculties are more involved in his business? You know, you have the famous words from the Rebbeim about that only if your hands are involved in your business rather than your head so much. Yeah, so maybe it depends on that. Anyway, so Elos, the Rabbi Yeshua says to them, rather, the correct answer is, you have to ask for mercy from the one, from Hashem, to whom Chochmah belongs. As the Pasuk says, Hashem gives wisdom. From Hashem's mouth comes understanding and knowledge. So knowledge and understanding.
Tuna is
more depth, right? We talk about chassidus, that chachma is the initial flash of an idea, bina is developing it, right? And in English, usually chachma, bina, and das are usually translated wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, right? So wisdom is the initial flash of the idea. Wisdom is the initial flash of the idea. Understanding is the developing of it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, the point is that, yeah, so Hashem is the one who provides these things. So you have to daven to Hashem. Tony Rav Chiya, in fact, Rav Chiya taught a braisa in that connection. Rav Yeshua, obviously, is not quoting Rav Chiya to them. Rav Chiya lived a couple of generations later, but the Gemara is bringing this in as an illustration of it. One second. Moshe Lamelech Boss of the Dom, shall also Sudala Avodav. It's like a king of flesh and blood who made a party for his servants. Umeshagel Oyhavav Mimashal Afanav. But he takes of the food that was served to him and he sends as a gift some of what's directly put in front of him to his good friends. The same way, chachma, so to speak, is Hashem's personal possession, like so to speak, his own portion at the party, and he gives of that to the ones who love him. So mipiv, it comes from Hashem's mouth, so to speak, like what you have on the plate in front of the king, which he sends directly from that.
Then again, it doesn't answer the question because he can ask Hashem for chokhmah.
One second. Okay, listen. My kamash malon. So why does Rabbi Yeshua give them 2 answers? The answer is the ha b'lay ha loisagya. Neither one without the other is enough. He mentioned to them first Yarba b'yeshiva, b'yamayi t'chorda, because you need to make your own hishtablis. You need to make your own effort. Then in addition, you need to daven to Hashem that keli, that effort that you're making should be successful. So you need both. That's the point. Yarba b'yeshiva b'yimayit b'schora is the keli that you're making for it. Without that, you can't reasonably ask Hashem for chokhmah if you're not putting in the effort.
So it makes you keli?
Makes you keli, yes. Because then, yeah. But then, in addition, you also have to realize that the keli is not enough. You have to ask Hashem to fill it with the bracha, right?
You have to do both.
So, right. So they're interdependent.
Decreasing
in Torah and ask Hashem for that. Right.
3 things.
Right. Okay. The next question they asked him is, Ma yasa odom bis asher? What should a person do in order to become rich? So he says to them, he's sort of the opposite. Yeah, Yarba B'schora, he should increase the amount of business that he does. The Yis of the Yitin Be'emunah, and he should do business honestly. Mind you, Hagoris HaGorot takes out the word Yarba B'schora. So he says the advice was just deal honestly in business. And by the way, it doesn't just mean honestly. It doesn't mean obviously, you know, don't cheat and steal and whatever. Also, Ben Yehoyada points out, it also means have a munah that Hashem is the one who provides your parnasa.
But he doesn't say it yet.
He says, Yisav Yitin Be'emunah. The word emunah has a double meaning. It means honestly. Yisav Yitin means to do business, means to buy and sell. Be'emunah. So emunah, the simple meaning of it, the surface meaning of it is to do business honestly, not to cut corners and whatever. But Ben Yehoyada also points out and has another meaning as well. Make sure that you have emunah in Hashem, realizing that Hashem is the one who makes your efforts successful. Again, Omrloi Habe also came Blahe Yilu. So the people of Alexandria object. Many people did that, and they weren't successful. Elos, the Rabbi Yeshua says, you're fine. Yevakesh Rachman Misha Oisha Shaloi. You have to daven for Rachmanos for the one, from the one, for Hashem, to whom wealth belongs. Shenema, Liyah Kesef Liyah Zahav. As the Pasuk says, the silver is mine, the gold is mine. So again, my Kamash Malan. So again, why did Rabbi Yeshua bother with the first answer, which they pointed out is flawed? The reason is, again, Dehov Alei Ha, Alei Tagi, one without the other is not enough. You need both halves of the advice. You need to make... Fine, but it's two halves of the advice. Number one is Yagub is part of Yisav Yitin Memuna. That's one part of the advice. That, in terms of the keli that you're making, the keli has to be an appropriate keli. So you put in your effort and you do it honestly and you do it with Betochen and Memuna and Betochen and Hashem. And then, in addition, the second part of it is that you also have to realize that it's not Kishi Ba'utim Yodi, that's not your efforts that make you successful. It's Hashem who makes you successful and you dive into Hashem for that. So those two things are both necessary.
Yeah, but before we said the Yimach is Chela.
Ah, so the two different, that was if a person wants to be Chacham versus the person wants to be Usher. And actually, you're right. The Aruch Haner talks about this a little bit. He says that maybe they were saying, you know, listen, if a person wants to be Chacham and you're saying Yimach is Chela, so what does that mean? Maybe, therefore, if a person wants to be rich, maybe he also should be keeping to a minor amount of business, but then he should be maybe cutting corners and dealing dishonestly in order to increase his profits. So they sort of be Yeshua tells him, no, that would be the wrong way to go about it.
Doesn't result in one place
to say, because one is to be Chacham and the other is to be Osher. It's two different questions. What is one? Sometimes you can have, well, it's Chacham and Torah. Sometimes where somebody is what's called Zoicha L'Shnei Shulchanos. You have the rare kind of thing where a person is Zoicha to good in this world and to Chachma and Ashirus, right? But it's not a very common thing. So there's actually a story involving the Mizrach Magid in that connection. I don't want to get too far off topic, but there's a story involving the Mizrach Magid. The gist of it is that there was a guy or a rich balabas who found out about the Mizrach Magid, became a chassid of his, and then he saw that his wealth is starting to disappear. So he asked the Magid what's going on. So the Magid explains to him, listen, you're a shtickle Talmud Chacham, you know your way around a piece of Gemara. So let me ask you, you have a Gemara in Baba Basra that says that if a person wants to be rich, then he should turn a little bit to the north when he's davening Shmoneh Esrei. Basically, he's facing Israel, but a little bit to the north. If you want to be smart, if you want to be wise in Torah, then you turn a little bit to the south. So what do you do? What do you do if you want to do both? You want to be rich and you want to be The answer is, so after all, so the Magid says, what you have to do is you have to be humble. If you're humble, if you're onav, then you don't take up space. If you don't take up space, then you can be simultaneously this way and that way. So the guy gets the hint. He's been a little too full of himself, and he realizes that he has to. So maybe that relates to our Gemara over here also. If a person wants to be a chacham and an usher, then he needs to work a little bit on his gaiva as well. Okay, anyway. Fine. The third question they asked is, Ma yasa adam biyula bonim schorim? What should a person do in order that he should have male children? In other words, of course, a person needs girls as well. I mean, of course, you need for periodic, you know, at least one boy and one girl. But other things being equal, we find in a number of places in the Gemara it was preferable to have boys for a number of reasons, among others. I mean, first of all, you know, the first question was about business. Boys, when they grow up, help you with your business. Girls, at least in those days, not necessarily. There's also the Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions, for example, a father of girls has trouble, you know, when she's younger, he's always nervous. Is she going to ever make a good shidduch? Is she going to go in the wrong direction or whatever? And then, yeah, so you know, there's a certain amount of... Fine, but with a girl, apparently, it was more of an issue because she's more likely to be seduced. And then, you know, Okay, anyway, the point is that other things being equal, people preferred to have boys. So they're asking him, what's the best way to go about that? So he says he should make sure to marry a woman who is suitable for him, meaning don't just marry her, for example, because she has money or because she's beautiful or whatever, but rather because she has good midas. The kaddish asked me, the shaftash. Hygienist means suitable.
Yeah, but how do you know it's made of?
Because that's basically what it means. Isha ha'iganeslo throughout Shas generally means a woman who you're not just marrying her because of exterior, because of external factors, but rather because of her midas. Because of
where does it say in Shas that it's regarding the midas?
So that's what's in different places. The kadishasna b'shas tashmish, and also then when the person is having relations, when the man is having relations with his wife, he should be makadish himself. Rashi says do it in a sneeristic way. Okay, Amru, so again, the people of Alexandria said, Habe also came, many people have done that, and it wasn't successful, and they had a lot more girls. It could be also, by the way, when we said Bonim Tzchorim, it may be that we're not just talking about, you know, Begashmias, that they're boys, but also, in other words, that they have the strength and the whatever of boys. So, you know, you have to find in many places in Shas, for example, that, you know, when we talk about Tzchorim, we're associating it with strength. Not just physical strength, but also mental strength and moral strength and whatever, where sometimes girls are, you know, dush and dice and talos and whatever. So the point is, in other words, it's not just that we're talking about that they should physically have, you know, boys, you know, children with an XY chromosome, but that even, you know, they're going to have girls, and after all, you have to have girls for period of you, that they should also have the maximum capacity that they're capable of and be able to accomplish powerfully in the world the way that men do.
Okay, that's fine, but in Pasha's Tazria, we say it's a physical...
Fine, goal. There's no question. Yeah, right. So there's no... Obviously, on one level, they're talking about just having physical male children, boys as opposed to girls, but I'm saying also there is an idea. I can tell you, for example, that one of my rebbeim, actually Rabbi Bornstein, Rabbi Bornstein, or Davin's over here. He was my rebbe in seventh grade. So when we were learning the Gemara, there's a Gemara in Bava Basra that says Ashri Misha Bonav Schorim Oylo Misha Bonav Nekevus. Happy is a person whose sons are male. Woe to a person whose sons are female. So he said a vote on that. The point is we're not just talking about boys versus girl. No, he was saying, I don't remember where he got this from, but he was saying, the point is, there's a Gemara over there, but the point is that it's not just, we're not just talking about boys versus girls, we're talking about Oiloi Lamisha Bon of Nekavis, woe to a person who has sons, but they're weak and vacillating and whatever, so that's the point, by the way. Right. Omru, so again they said, Habe also came below here. Many people followed your advice and it wasn't effective. Ella, so no, you're right, Rabbi Yeshua said, you have to ask for mercy from the one to whom children belong, which is Hashem. Shenamahine nachlas Hashem bonim sacha priya botim. Behold, the inheritance of Hashem's sons, the reward of the fruit of the womb. So again, my
comment.
Who says they're talking about Sorry? These are Jews, the Pashtus that we're talking to.
The Jews in Alexandria?
Yeah. Well, there were many Jews in Alexandria in those days, sure. Yeah. So the question, and why not? You can say to Goyim also that Hashem runs the world. They may not understand, but you still have to tell them. My Kamash Malon, again, what's the point of Rabbi Yeshua giving them the two halves of the advice? Same thing. The Hobloi Holoi Sagi, one without the other is enough. You have to make your Kali. You have to make your establish by doing the part that depends on you. Make sure that you're marrying a wife for the proper reasons, not just because of her beauty or whatever, and that you're acting properly with Shas Tashmish. And then, in addition, you have to realize that ultimately it doesn't only depend on your keli. Ultimately, it depends on Hashem filling that keli with bracha. But on the other hand, you can't just say daven to Hashem without making your efforts, without making your keli. So in all three, Marsha points out the three things that they asked him about correspond to. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when a baby is conceived, the malach brings the fertilized drop to Hashem and asks what's going to be with this child. Is it going to be strong or weak, poor or rich, smart or dumb? So that corresponds to the three things that they're asking about over here. Like given that there may be a gzeira min hashamayim, that a person is destined, let's say, to be poor or to be poor or to be dumb or to be weak or whatever, what can he do to overcome that and to overcome that gzeira? And so Rabbi Yeshua, in each case, is telling them.
Why does the Gemara have to take an example of Jews in Alexandria?
Because these are the people who asked Rabbi Yeshua the questions. If they were Jews in Eretz Yisrael, they would ask Rabbi Yeshua these 12 questions, and it would have said, and then it would have said them. But since it was people in Alexandria, then that's who it was. Anyway, I was going to say also, the Aruch HaNer has a long explanation over here about how all these three things are interdependent. Again, like the first two, like I was saying before, they say if you want to be smart, and if you want to be wise in Torah, and Rabbi Yeshua is telling them you have to reduce your involvement with your business, so they're saying, okay, but what if you want to be rich? Should you maybe keep your involvement less with your business, but just then start cheating and cutting corners in order to make an extra buck? And he tells them, no, that would be the wrong way. And then they say, okay, so maybe you should marry a woman for her money, and then that way you'll have money that way. And he tells them, no, then that's the end. My socher priya button. What does it mean? The end of the pasuk we just quoted, the reward of the fruit of the womb. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Chanina, b'schar shemashin asman b'beten. It means that Hashem gives as a reward for a person who delays on the stomach. Kedei shetazriya ishrei tchila, in order that his wife will emit seed first. One second. Noisim le'akadosh baruch hu socher priya button, and Hashem gives him a reward for that of fruit of the womb that he has children, that he has the appropriate kind of children. What does that mean? It means, in other words, like this. We learned, as you mentioned before, we learned earlier in the Masechta, Ish Mazriya Tchila Yaledes Nekeva, Ish Mazrach Tchila Yaledes Zachar. So it depends which one is Mazriya first. So if you have a man who is Mashin Ala Betin, he delays while he's lying on his wife's stomach, while they're having relations, and he delays his own enjoyment, his own orgasm, in order to pleasure her and make sure that she has her first, then Hashem rewards him for that. That's Sachar Priya Bahinin Nachlas Hashem Bonim Sachar Priya Batin. That is the right. Not only if you can, but actually you bring up an important point, which is the Ravid asks on this. We find elsewhere, we find the Gemara in Nedarim that says almost the opposite, that says about Rabbi Eliezer, that when he was having relations with his wife, he would like do it as quickly as possible and get it over with. Kamisha Kfoy Shade, almost as if like a demon forced him to. So what does that mean? So it's just the opposite. Here we're saying you should delay, and there we're saying you should do it as quickly as possible. So the Ravid answers, and the Magen Avraham brings it in Hilchos Tznius and Shulchan Aruch, that it really depends what the person's motivation are. There's two different ways of doing it, both of which can be L'shem Shemayim. One is where he delays his gratification, which is what we're talking about over here, in order to that his wife should have pleasure. And he's the kind of person where he knows he's not going to have, in the course of that, he's not going to have inappropriate thoughts. Good, then let him do that. Then that's his way of doing L'shem Shemayim. On the other hand, then you can have a person, and apparently Rabbi Eliezer was concerned that this might be the case with him, where if he takes too long over the act, then he may start having inappropriate thoughts in the course of it, thinking about other women or whatever it is, and therefore he wants to get it over with as fast as possible. Fine. That he's also doing L'shem Shemayim, and Hashem rewards him also appropriately. Really? Yeah, so that's the guy that brings it. The guy that brings it, and the Magen Avraham brings it. So it's, in other words, the Or Gemara is not saying the full story. Or Gemara is saying one half of the story for one type of person. Then there's a different type of person who has to do things differently. Okay, you know, I mean, similar to, for example, in Tanya, you know, right, the Alter Rebbe gives many different strategies in Avoda for different kinds of people. You have one kind of person, for example, who's more easily convinced by the Eitz Hara for such and such, that he needs this strategy to deal with his Nefesh HaBahamas. And they have a different type who needs a different strategy. So different people, yeah. Okay, fine. Okay. Getting back to, we said in the Mishnah, Beis Shammai Omer Mechola, we said in the last part of the Mishnah, Beis Shammai said that all women, when they die, are considered nidos, and Beis Hillel says only if she was actually a nido before she died. So, my time out of Beis Shammai, so the question is, why does Beis Shammai say that automatically when a woman is dead, we consider her nida, which would mean, therefore, if we say that, then we have the first half of the Mishnah where we said the whole Evan Masama business. We said that if you had a body of a nida or any of these other, or a zava or a zava or whatever, on top of a heavy stone and kalim underneath it or vice versa, then we say the kalim are tame. So Beis Shammai is saying that applies to all women, whether we know them to have been nida before they died or not. So the question is why? Are you going to say it's based on what it says in Megillah Esther? It says that when Esther was told the news about what Haman is plotting, then she trembled. That's Yischauchal Hamalka. It literally means that she trembled, but she was really very, very frightened. But Omar Rav, and Rav explains in the Gemara in Megillah, Malamed Shepers and Nida. This teaches us that at that point, all of a sudden, she became Nida. All of a sudden, she started having a flow. So therefore you would say, so hachanami, so here also you would say, agav v'yasusa de malacha de moisachalia, you're going to say that the woman right before she dies sees the malacha mavas, and that frightens her, and therefore that could cause her to have an emission of nida. The question is, how could that be? V'hananshnan, we learned earlier in our Masechta, shachad rodam esalekas esadamim. We had a din over there that a mayor had said that if you have a woman in hiding when it comes the time of her vest, then we don't assume that she became nida because fear stops the blood. So why would it cause? Right. So why would? The answer is holei kasha. That's not a big problem because there's a difference. Pach the tzomis biasusa merafia. Because there's a difference between. And pachta is an ongoing fear that stops up the blood, that dries it up, as opposed to biasusa, a sudden fright. Miraphia, that loosens things and can cause a flow. In other words, the Malach HaMavet appearing to her all of a sudden is a sudden thing. Therefore, it's a sudden thing. Like with Esther, when she all of a sudden received the news of what's going on over there, where that can all of a sudden cause her to emit blood where she wouldn't have otherwise. As opposed to the mayor's case is the case where she's hiding out in a hideout from whatever anti-Semites there are at the time. That's an ongoing fear, and therefore that's going to block things. Right? So that's not a problem. So we could still say that maybe Beis Shammai's reason is based on that it's a sudden fear, but the problem with that is Ela Hodznan. But what about this that we learn in a Mishnah or the Tanya? Actually, it says on the side of the Braita, Miraki means it loosens it. Ela Hodznan. But the problem is, what about this that we learn in a Braita? Beis Shammai Emim Kol HaAnoshim Meisim Zavim. Beis Shammai says, by the same token, whenever a man dies, he's automatically considered to be a Zav, and therefore the dinim of our Mishnah apply to him. Or Beis Hillel, that's we have to figure out why. Or Beis Hillel Emim Ein Zav Ela Misha Mes Zav. And Beis Hillel says that only if he actually died as a known Zav. Why? Now, Mela with a woman, we know, we've learned earlier in the Masechta that it doesn't really matter whether the blood came because of oinus or not. Either way, it still is metameir. But by a man not, ikri kan mibsore v'lay machnas oinsoi, shouldn't we be applying over here the din that a man becomes a zav only if it was a spontaneous, idiopathic thing without any specific known cause, and not where it was v'lay machnas oinsoi, not if it was because of an oinus? And here it would be an onus. If you're going to say that the man got frightened of the Malach HaMavet, that would be an example of an onus. So you can't say, for once you know that it doesn't apply to a man, and it obviously can't, because the Shammai would have to agree that onus doesn't make a man a Zav, then by the same token, it shouldn't apply to a woman either. So we're back to the... No, but why would be... The fact is it's the same principle. So therefore, so we're back to the question. Why... No, but the point still remains. No, obviously, but they both have the same din of our Mishnah, that Evan Masama, and the point is, they're both emissions, and if Beis Shammai is going to say that all men, when they die, are considered Zavim, meaning that it's not a matter of oiness, then we have to ask, then why, it is an oiness, though, so by men, they shouldn't be Tomei, so why would we be making a similar thing by men and women? El Taimer de Beis Shammai Kedetanya. Rather, Beis Shammai's reason is based on the following brayta. The original rule was that when you had kalim, whether it means utensils, whether it means blankets or clothes or whatever, that were used for nidos who had died. They would total them because they became tamei. They became tamei from the nida. In other words, we're talking about even if this thing was not touching the body after the person died. So let's say, for example, you have, let's say, a blanket that was used to cover her a day before she died. And now that blanket isn't there anymore. So nevertheless, the Shammai would say that you have to total it. Not the Shammai. The Braita is saying originally they would total them. But her nidus chayus mitbaishus. The problem was women who are nidus, who are still alive, are embarrassed about that. The result is, it comes out, therefore, in effect, what we have is they're being treated differently even after they died. We're saying, in other words, like this. For example, if they hadn't been a nidda, you would have no reason to total that blanket unless it touched the body after death. Like this, you're saying even the fact that she was a nidda, so to speak, follows her into the grave, and they still have to total this thing afterwards. So women who are niddas, who are alive, are embarrassed from that. Well, not necessarily every woman is a nidda. He's skinu. Therefore, they made a takana. Shiyu matbilin agabe kolam nashim. They made a new takana that all kalim that are used with people before they die, all women, whether they were niddas or not, should always be toivled b'pnei kvoidon shel niddas chayes, because of the honor of the live niddas. This way, in other words, we're going to make a general rule, a blanket statement, if you'll excuse the pun, that any, for example, blanket or keli or whatever that is used on a person shortly before they died, we're going to tovel it, whether the woman was a nidda or not. And that way, we're not kind of discriminating with whether she was a nidda or not. So Beis Shammai is applying that rule. Therefore, they're saying that, therefore, in our Mishnah, whether she was actually a nidda or not, we're treating her as if she was, and that way there won't be this distinction between whether she died a nidda or not, in order not to embarrass the live nidda, right, as opposed to the silver.
Okay, what is the answer about?
Tosfos brings over here from a Gemara in Moed Katan that brings this Braita and seems to bring it as an established halacha that apparently even Beis Hillel would agree to. So Tosfos says, The difference is that the difference is the braisa over here is talking about, for example, like we're saying, let's say blankets that were on the woman or on the man shortly before they died. So those b'shila would agree that we have to make the takana in order not to embarrass the living zavis. The case of our Mishnah about the Eben Masama, that would be the machlokes. So b'shila would say, this is fine, we agree that you have to extend this thing about toveling the blankets or whatever, or the kalim or whatever, because of the honor of the live nidus, fine, that we can agree with. But to say that should go so far as to be metamed kalim that were under an Eben Masama and not distinguish there between an actual nidah and not, that b'shila says we can't agree to that. Also, Tosfos says another possibility, the Borishon. So that's the connection. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is that what it can mean is originally they followed Basilo. Later on, everybody agreed that we should follow Bishrana in order not to embarrass the live nidus. Okay.
Irie means it points to?
Irie means it's referring to.
Referring to.
Okay. Similarly, where do you see the word Irie in?
The Irie in the Tosfos.
The Irie that it's talking of. Yeah, the Hocha Irie that he was referring to. Yeah, okay, I'm sure you'll have some of them. Right. Yeah. Okay. Similarly, continues the Braisa, Barishona Hoyu Matbilo Nagabe Zovin Mesin, by the same token, when you had blankets or kalim or whatever that were used with live Zovin, they would tovel them after the Zov died. Zovin Chayin Mispaishin, the same thing now, live Zovin are embarrassed, that like they're being treated differently even after they die. His Kinoshi Matbilo Nagabe Kolhan Noshim, so they made a sakana that any kalim that are used with live men have to be toveled afterwards with Nekvoda until Zovin Chayin because of the honor of the live Zovin. Same idea. So again, according to Tosfos's first answer, both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel would agree with this din. They're just arguing whether to also extend it to Evan the Summer. According to Tosfos's second explanation, originally they followed Beit Hillel, and then it was decided that everybody should follow Beit Shammai.
And that's why it's considered like an off.
And that's why it's considered like an established halacha. Okay, fine. Mishnah says, for Isha Shemesa, if a woman died, the Yosam Menu Revius Dam, and a Revius of blood came out of her uterus, Metama Mishum Kesem, that blood is Metame on the grounds of a Kesem, meaning, in other words, now we learned earlier in the Masechta that Dam Nida, you don't need a minimum amount to be Metame. Practically speaking, when you find a kesem, you can't be metame it when it's less than a gris because it might be blood from a louse or whatever. But in other words, in principle, it itself is metame with a small amount, even if it's less than a revius. And also, a metame ba'oil. And furthermore, if there's a revius together, then it's also metame ba'oil like any other revius of blood from a mess.
But then there has to be a revius.
So that's the difference. If you're talking about to be metame as blood of a nida by touching it, then it would be b'mashahu. If you're talking about to be metame b'oil, then you need a revius. Right. Rabbi Yehuda ain't a metame mishum kesem. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not metame on the grounds of blood of a nida. Because he says it only started coming out of the body. It only started coming out of the uterus after she died. And once she's dead, the dinim of nida don't apply anymore. So therefore, if you have a revius, then fine, it'll be a revius of blood from a dead person. Otherwise, not. Umoydir of Yehuda. We're talking about the blood. If you have a revius of it in one place, and it's metama like any other revius of blood from a mess, but if you have less than that, then not. Umoydir of Yehuda be a shevet al mashver. Rabbi Yehuda will agree with the Chachamim if the woman was in labor when she umeta, and then she died in labor. The yosem men a revius dam, and then a revius of blood comes out of her. Then you would say mishum metame mishum kesem. Then he would agree that that blood is metame, even if you have less than a revius of it in one place, because of blood that came from her uterus. Because then obviously it started coming out while she was alive, while she was in labor.
Mashver
is the birth stool.
Yeah.
Right.
Stone, what is it?
There were different kinds. I mean, the most, I think, one common one you have in there, the Pasuk in Shemot, or Isam Allah of Noyim, is that they would have two stones with a space between them. So, like, the woman would crouch down on them, and the baby would be delivered through the space between the stones. Okay, whatever, anyway. So Rabbi Yehuda will agree. In that case, the blood definitely started coming out while she's alive. So Rabbi Yossi says, well, given Rabbi Yehuda's point, that in that case the blood started coming out while she was alive, then it can't be metame b'oil, because only blood from a dead person is metame b'oil, even if you have a revius. Okay. Well, let's see. Well, hold on. Let's go through the Gemara first. Okay. So the Gemara asks, so what are you telling me? That And you're saying, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the blood only started coming out after she's dead. Therefore, it can't be metame as dam nida. So what does that mean? The 12, the Tanakama, Sova, Apagab, the neck, or dam mishamase, and metame mishamkesem. And what does that mean? The Tanakama would say that even if we know for a fact the blood only started coming out after she's dead, then we would say it's still metame as blood of a nida. Why?
What's the implication of what?
The implication is, if Rabbi Yehuda is saying, because the blood started coming out only after she died, started coming out of the uterus only after she died, when the muscles start relaxing, whatever, therefore it's not metame as blood of a nida. The Tanakama, who said it is metame as blood of a nida, so what, he's going to say blood that comes out of a woman after she died should be metame as blood of a nida? Why? She's dead. The answer is, Amar of Zairi, Mako Makome Tome Ikebenai. The argument between them turns on a point that we've learned a few times in the Masechta. Is blood that comes from the uterus, even when it's not actual dam nido, dam divo, or whatever, is it still a source of tumah anyway? So the Tanakama would say that it still is an ava tumah, it still is metame, because it was in the womb while she was alive. Even after she passes away, it comes out. We still say mako makome tome. The fact that blood was in the womb is enough to be
as,
well, it didn't come out while she was alive.
No.
Right. So therefore it's enough to be metame as blood of a nida, right? Yeah. Right.
That's kind of unusual.
That's what it means. Mako makai metame. So in other words, it's metame with mago of a master. Because it was in
nida.
Well, in that sense it's like blood of a nida, right? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say that no, Mako is not Makai Metame, so therefore I don't care that it was in the uterus. Mako, the womb, the uterus, is not Makai Metame. The place itself is not a source of trauma. Therefore, the fact that the blood was in the uterus while she was alive is neither here nor there. It only started coming out after she died, and therefore that's it. Right. Okay. Then we said Umoide Rabbi Yehuda. We said Rabbi Yehuda would agree that if she was in labor when she died, then we would say the blood is metame mishum kesem. And Rabbi Yossi says, well, given that in that case it started coming out while she was alive, then it can't be metame ba'oil. Now, implicitly, Rabbi Yossi, apparently is disagreeing with the Tanakama. The Tanakama apparently would hold it as metame ba'oil. So the question is, the Tanakama sova ba'oil nami metame? Or does that mean the Tanakama means that it is metame ba'oil? Or on the side here, it brings a gusa that Marashah brings, that maybe are you going to say Rabbi Yehuda says it's a time of oil? Because in other words, Rabbi Yossi seems to be disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi mentions if Rabbi Yossi has to specify that it's not Matamah Ba'oil, the implication is that one of the earlier Tanoim, either the Tanakama or Rabbi Yehuda, holds that it is. But why should it? If it started coming out while she was alive, how can it be Matamah Ba'oil? Blood from a live person is not Matamah Ba'oil. The answer is Omer Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda, the Amorah answer is Dam Tvusa Ikebenayu. The argument in the Mishnah, the argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi, has to do with the question of Dam Tvusa. Dam Tvusa, Tvusa comes from a word that means wallowing.
Yeah.
So it means, in other words, so as we're going to discuss now, it means that you have... One second. It's blood where you have a suffix, whether all of it started coming out while the person was alive, or some while they were alive and some after they died. That kind of thing is called Dam Tvusa. Midah Raisa, only if a Revius comes out after death, would it be Metame? Midah Rabbanon, when you have a total Revius over here, and you're not sure how much of it came out while they're alive versus how much dead, then it's Metame Bo. As I just said, Tavutza is Meloshin Mitvesethis Bidamoyach, which means wallowing in your blood.
Wallowing.
Like you have like swimming around or whatever in blood. So then you have blood that's leaking out over here, some before, some after, and you're not sure how much before and how much after. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, a zehu dam tvusa. What is the definition of dam tvusa, where we say that midirabbanon is metame ba'oil, pirish of a lozer, but of Yehuda, horug shiyotim emenu dam. It means you have, for example, a person who was killed by the sword. Shiyotim emenu dam, blood is pouring out of him. Bein b'chaya bein memori. So some is coming out while he's still alive. Some only after he died. Suffolk b'chayav yotza, suffolk b'moise yotza. So you have a suffolk. What part of this blood came out while he was alive? Maybe all of it came out while he was alive, and only when it finished coming out did he die. Maybe all of it came out after he died. Sophic B'chayev Rumoi, so, or maybe some of it while he was alive and some of it after he died. Zehu Dam Tavusa, that is the definition of Dam Tavusa. And then if you have a Rebius of that, then if you have a Rebius of that in one place, then it's Matam Imid Rabban.
Even though
some of it could have come before death. If it came out all after death, it would be the time out of Daraita.
Right.
But because we have the suffix, whether it was all when he was alive, all when he was dead, or some when he was alive, some when he was dead, Midirabbanan, we said, is the possibility it came out all after he was dead, and therefore it's coming. So that's Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yehuda's definition. But Chachamim Omim, the Chachamim say no, that wouldn't be Dam Tursa, because then you have the usual rule, when you have a suffix of Tumah. Birshus HaYachid Sveik HaChamah, Birshus HaRabim Sveik HaChar. Then you would apply the usual rules, when you have a suffix of Tumah. Depends whether it's in Birshus HaYachid or Birshus HaRabim. Ela Ezehu Dam Tursa, so the Chachamim say, no, what is our definition of Dam Tursa? We agree there is such a thing as Dam Tursa. We just disagree with your definition of it. We say the definition is horug sheyotzim men revias dam b'chayev uva moisei. You have a person was stabbed or killed or whatever with a sword, where blood came out of him, a revias came out while he was alive, and some of it while he was alive, some of it after he died. Va'adayin loy posak, and it has not yet stopped. So we'll explain in a second what that means. It hasn't yet stopped. There's three different explanations in Tosafot. So therefore, Sophic Rubai Bachayev Humiote Bemosai. So in other words, it's not like not in other words, in Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda's case, it's possible that all the blood came out while he was alive. It's also possible all of it came out after he's dead. That's possible. Here it's we know some of it came out while he was alive and some of it came out after, but by dying like Posak, it didn't stop yet. So we'll explain in a second what a dying like Posak means. Then the question is Sophic Rubai Bachayev Humiote Bemosai. So now it's the Sophic is did most of it come out while he was alive and only a little bit after he died? Suffolk Miote Bechayev Rubai Bemosai, or maybe it was the other way around, a little bit of it while he was alive and most of it after he died. Zehu Dam Tavusa, that is the definition of Dam Tavusa, says the Chacham. Now what do we mean like Posak? The Tosfos brings a couple of different explanations. One is a dying like Posak is that exactly what it sounds like. The blood has not stopped even after he died. It's continuing to pour out. So therefore, you may have a complete revius that came out after he died. So even before we reach the point where we can say pretty much with a certainty that a revius came out after he died, the Chachamim would say already at that point we're going to be metameh. But if we see that the blood stopped after he died, then we would say that we don't have the din of Dam Tavusa because then we can assume that, because then most likely a revius did not come out after he died. So that's the first explanation in Tosfos. The second explanation of Loi Posak is that there's a difference between whether it's streaming or whether it's dripping. A dying Loi Posak means that it's streaming, you know, in a stream, in a flow.
It oozes,
in other words, continuously. As opposed to, according to the second explanation, if it was dripping drop by drop, then we would say each drop, yes, he's dead, and his blood is now metame, but each drop, as it falls into the pool of blood that came out while he was alive, which is not metame, each drop, as it falls in, is bottle, beroi. So therefore, you would never end up with a revius that's considered to have come from the mess. Where the flow can't be bottle, because it's constantly flowing in. Yeah. So that's the second explanation. So the first explanation is it depends whether the blood continued to flow after he died versus if we see that it stopped at when or shortly after he died. The second explanation,
which means
only if we see that it's still flowing, that blood is still coming out after he died, then we would say Dam Tavusa, once you have a revius total. The second explanation is it depends whether the blood is oozing or dripping or whatever. Yeah, right, flowing versus
so
dripping, right?
Dripping is...
Dripping would be bottle. Dripping would be bottle.
All the conditions have to be fulfilled?
What do you mean, old? No.
One by one.
Well, it's just three different explanations in Tosfos.
Okay.
Right. So according to the second explanation, if it's dripping drop by drop, then it won't be Dam Tavusa, and it won't be metame. And if it's going continuously, then it will. The third explanation in Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam says in Tosfos, is that after we know that he died, we see that the blood didn't stop. So therefore, a little bit of it obviously came out after he died, and therefore, so now already we can say maybe it was not just a minority, maybe at that point it was the majority, as opposed to if we see that once we know for a fact that he died, we see that no more blood is flowing, then we can't call it Dam Tavusa.
So it has to flow.
So it has to at some point, right. Okay, so those are the various explanations. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda continues in the Braisa, Horug Shiyasim Men Revius Dam, if you have a person was killed by the sword, and Revius of blood came out of him, Vahoyamuto Bemita, the person is lying in a bed, the Dame Metaskis Laguma, and his blood is dripping into a pit, into a hole in the ground, Tome, that blood that's in the pit is tome, because you have mixed in somewhere in there is the actual drop that the drop that came out when he died. In other words, the idea is, you know, we're talking about a horug, so ultimately what is he dying of? He's dying of blood loss. So Rabbi Yehuda says there has to come a point, there's a, you know, a certain drop comes out, and like that, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. At that point then, you know, there's not enough blood left for him to continue living on, to continue oxygenating his body or whatever. So therefore, that drop is mixed in there, and therefore he says, therefore Rabbi Yehuda says the blood is going to, right, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying, therefore the blood is going to be tamei because of that. The Chachamim Masharin, whereas the Chachamim would say, if it's going drop by drop, then they would say, no, it's tahor. Because again, each one as it as because it's not flowing, so it's dripping. So each one as so even if most of the blood comes out la'acha misa, each drop as it falls in is bottle on the blood that's already there.
Which is primarily before
death, right. So the question is, Shaper Kamri Le Rabbanan Rabbi Yehuda. So don't the Chachamim have a good argument against Rabbi Yehuda? Why is Rabbi Yehuda saying that even if it's dripping drop by drop, it still becomes Tomei? The answer is Rabbi Yehuda L'Taimei. Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his own Svara, Dama Ein Dam Mevatel Dam. Rabbi Yehuda says, blood is, we learned this back in Zemachim, that blood is not Mevatel blood. Right, so therefore he says it doesn't matter any amount. So therefore, even if it's one drop, nevertheless, it still can't be bottled in the blood that's already there. And therefore, once you have the typical mitzvah or whatever, then already it's going to be metamei. Okay.
Where does he take it from?
Where he takes the original idea in Dam Mevatel Dam, we learned in Zvachim about it. You have in the Avodah of Yom Kippur, you have at one point the Kohen Gadol takes the blood of the par. The power of Kohen Gadol, which is he brings the blood into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and into the Kodesh and sprinkles it over there on Yom Kippur, and then he does the same thing with the Sor LaShem, and then he mixes the two bowls of blood. A power has much more blood in it than a Sor. If we were to say the usual rules of Bittul, Midaraisi, only a numerical row to be Mevatel, it's only Midrabanan that you have the concept of 60 or 100 or whatever. Once you have it by Yom Kippur, then Rabbi Yehuda learns from it for other cases that we see Ein Dam Mevatel Dam. Yeah, more generally, Rabbi Yehuda says more generally the idea that he says that in general min b'mino is not so easily bought.
And what
was
the
Chachamim? I don't remember maybe the Chachamim do say it because there's a cause over there. I don't remember. We had a discussion about it in Zvachim. We had a Yomah. Yeah. Okay, fine. All right. Continues the Braisa. Reb Shimon Omer, Solov al Ha'et. So Reb Shimon says, suppose you have somebody who is Solov on a piece of wood. Solov is often used in the Targum as a translation of somebody who's hanging. But the pastures, we don't mean hanging like with a rope, because then we were talking about that blood is flowing out of him, and when a person is hanged like that, you don't necessarily have blood flowing. So Bakashtus, which are very likely we're talking about over here, Solu can mean somebody who was crucified.
By the way, we don't use Russian Solu to talk about hanging, is it? Totally.
In Hebrew, yes, but in Aramaic, sometimes they use it, and you can find in Targum Onkelos. You can find sometimes in Targum Onkelos and Targum Yonis and whatever, they use the shortish, they use Tadik Lamed Veis to refer to hanging. But there are possibilities over here. More likely, it means crucified, where of course blood is flowing out of the person because he got nails driven into it. The word selam is something else, but actually you have in modern Hebrew they use the word slav to mean a cross, and you have various other words in Hebrew in modern Hebrew that come from that, not necessarily that have to do with the cross as a religious item. You have for as a Christian item. You have, for example, a crossroads or whatever. They'll see. Okay, anyway. So the pastors over here, we're talking about somebody who's crucified. It's also possible we're talking about somebody who was impaled, which was also a punishment they used in the olden days, where, in fact, you have some people think that even, in fact, in most, if not all places in Tanakh, where it mentions the Shodash Tola, some people think that maybe it means impalement. For example, Haman and his sons, we always classically think of them as having been hanged by the neck, but you have people who argue that actually the favored method of execution in Persia in those days was impalement, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe they impaled them. They impaled them on a big pole, like they have a big pole stuck through their body, essentially. Anyway. If you have somebody who's crucified or impaled or whatever on a stick, on a piece of wood, so his blood is streaming down to the ground, the nymph path of Revius Dam, and underneath him you find a Revius of blood in one place, Tomei. So that Revius of blood is Matame, says Rav Shimon. Rabbi Hoda Matahar, whereas Rabbi Hoda says that it's Tahar. Shani Omer, because Rabbi Shimon says, you can say, Rabbi Hoda rather says, listen, Shani Omer, because I say, not necessarily did the drop of blood that came out when he died, not necessarily is that on the ground. The drop that came out as he was dying, it's still up there on the wood. It's still up there on the cross or whatever, and therefore it's not on the ground, so it's not part of that ravine. So therefore, the Revius is not Matam. So the question is, but if you heard a name Shani Kipashal Mita and Mita, we just said on Amud Aleph that Rabbi Yehuda was saying you have the case where the person was stabbed and now is lying in a bed and blood is streaming out and dripping out, whatever, and landing on the floor. So Rabbi Yehuda says that we assume that the Kipashal Mita landed in the hole on the floor. Why over here is he assuming it stayed on top of the wood? The difference is shiny b'mitzah d'machalchala. Shiny b'mitzah d'machalchala. It's different when it's on a bed, because then a bed, after all, is made out of fiber or whatever. So therefore, the drop of blood is much more likely to be able to penetrate through and drip onto the floor below, as opposed to wood is not quite so porous. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's more likely that the blood stayed on top and didn't fall to the ground. Right? Okay. All right, so that's the bottom line. In other words, we have this concept of dam tvusa, so that's what drives the machlokes in our mission. When Rabbi Yossi is saying ain't a matama ba'oil, so we're talking about over here that because we have different definitions of what dam tvusa is. That, again, Rabbi Yehuda would say the blood, it's suffice whether it came out of this woman's uterus while she was alive or after she died or part before and part after. Therefore, it's going to be dam tvusa. Rabbi Yossi is going to say it's not dam tvusa because we can assume all the blood came out while she was alive because she was in labor. So therefore, when the stammer, all the blood came out while she was still in labor and then try to push out the baby. Okay. The halacha is like the Tanakama in our Mishnah. So the blood is matame, is matame as blood of nida, and if you have a revius of it in one place, then it's matame of oil. Dam tvusa, in other words. Mishnah says, Barishona hayu oimin. Originally, the Chachamim used to say, the rule is, Hayeshevet. Now let's talk about going back to, we learned earlier in the Masechta about Yeshevet al Dam Toya. We have a woman who we have during, after the first 1 week or 2 weeks after she had a boy or a girl, respectively. Then she has 33 days for a boy or 66 for a girl, when even though she's bleeding, she's still Tahar. She's allowed to be with her husband. However, as far as the genome of Tumah v'Tahara are concerned, she's considered during that period what the Gemara is going to call Tvulas Yom Oruch. It's called like a long-term Tvul Yom. Normally it's Tvul Yom, let's say for example, a person became Tomei by a sheriff or what have you, he toibles in the mitzvah, that night, Tesek HaChav, and he becomes Tahar. So only for that half a day or whatever is it Tvul Yom. Tvulas Yom Oruch over here means what happens after the 7 or 14 days, she goes to the mikveh, and then she's Tahar to her husband. But when does she become Tahar as far as Kodshim? Only when the 40 or 80 total days have passed, and she brings her korbanos.
I should say
there are three stages over here. You have the stage where she, you have the stage, you have the seven or 14 days when she's completely tummy. You have, after that, she goes to the mikveh. Then you have the 33 or 66 days of dam toyer begin. During that time, she's like a tvul yom. It's considered as if it was one long day until her tumah goes away. During that time, as we're going to see in the next Mishnah, she's allowed to eat maizeh sheni, because a tvul yom is allowed to eat maizeh sheni. However, she's not allowed to eat tumah. She's not allowed to.
Tvulyam
is not allowed to eat truma, so neither is she. Eventually, what happens is the 40 or 80 total days end. Then at that point, she goes to the mikveh again. Actually, we'll discuss whether she needs to go to the mikveh or whatever. At that point, then she becomes tahar as far as truma, and then the next day she brings her korbanos, and then she's tahar as far as kachim. But Rishona Hoyu Omrim, originally the Chachamim used to say, Hayeshevet al Dam Tohar, that this woman who is doing this 33 or 66 day period, where she's considered a Tzvul Yom Aruch, she's in the status for that entire time of Tzvul Yom. So they said, she is allowed to pour out water for the Pesach. What does that mean? So you have a few different explanations. Rashi says what it means is, now like this, you have to have water to rinse off the meat of the Korban Pesach, because after you've shechted the Korban Pesach, you have to rinse it off from the surface blood and whatever before you roast it. So that water, ma'ara means to pour out. Malashim pouring out. Like it says by Rivka. She poured out her pitcher.
Pouring
out.
What is Zug?
Huh? I don't know. Okay, one thing. Okay, anyway. The point is, Rashi explains like this. You have, now, you're not necessarily going to use the first keli that you use to draw the water. You're not necessarily going to use that same keli to pour directly from there onto the meat. You're going to transfer it to another keli.
Right.
This Yeshevet al-Dam Tohar is allowed to do that part. She's allowed to take the water, she's allowed to take the one keli full of water and pour it into another keli to get ready to use for rinsing the Korban Pesach. She can't touch the water itself because being a Tevulas Yom, if she has still a degree of truma, she's considered a sheni l'truma. So therefore, she would passel truma or kodshim. So like this, but when she's only pouring the water, then she's only touching the kalim, and fine, she's a sheni l'truma. A sheni l'truma can't make kalim tummy, so it's okay. There's different. She can't make the kalim itself tummy. Right, so as long as she doesn't touch the water itself, then we're good. There's a couple of other explanations among Rishonim. The Aruch explains that it means that she can actually pour the water onto the Korban Pesach itself, because the fact that the water is going from the keli that she's touching doesn't matter because you're not touching the Pesach directly. And the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos has a different possibility that it means that she's pouring out water that's going to be used for baking matzahs, which are going to be eaten with the Korban Pesach. Okay, whatever it is.
Either way,
she can't be mitzvah. So Chazru Loimar, then the Chachamim changed their mind and said, Harei k'magat memes v'kodshim k'divre v'silo. They said, now we end up with machlokas v'shamay and v'silo. One second. So we say like she's somebody who touched a tummy mess, which is a rishon. A rishon only as far as kodshim, not as far as cholin. Which means, therefore, since this water itself is cholin, the water itself is not part of the Korban Pesach. It's only being used to rinse the Korban Pesach. Therefore, the Chachamim became more lenient and said, therefore, that she's even able to touch the water. It doesn't matter if she touches the water itself, she's not going to be the tamei, because she's not tamei insofar as cholin are concerned. Tzvul Yom is only a sheni, and by during the days of Damtar, right, during the 33 or 66 days. So according to Beit Hillel, she's even allowed to touch the water. Beit Shammah Omer Afkit Tamei Mes, whereas Beit Shammah would say that no, she is like a Tamei Mes, and therefore she would not be able to touch the water. So the Gemara says, Ma'ara ein negas loy. Now we're saying the implication is, in the first part of the mission, the original halacha, was she's only allowed to pour out the water, again, like Rashi says, from one keli to another, but not to actually touch the water itself. So what does that mean? Now the water itself is not part of the kodshim. Alma. Well, that's the question. Alma chulin shenasu al taras hakodesh kodesh gamu, implying that chulin, which things that are chulin in and of themselves, but they're being prepared according to the standards of kodshim, have the status of kodshim. Which we had a long, we had a long discussion about it in chulin, right? Because in other words, that's the point. Even though the water itself is chulin, we're saying she's not supposed to touch it because she'll be metame. The problem is Ema Sefer, but then look at the next part of the Mishnah. Chazru Loimar Harei K'magat Memes L'Kodshim. Then we said that she's only like somebody who touched a Tamei Mes insofar as Kodshim. In other words, that she's going to make Kodshim, that she's a Rishon L'Truma as far as Kodshim, but a Sheni L'Truma as far as Cholin. L'Kodshim Ein L'Cholin Loi. So only she's a Rishon L'Truma as far as actual Kodshim, but not as far as Cholin. Alma Cholin Shenasu Al Taras HaKodesh Lav K'Kodesh Gamu. So then we see that Cholin that are prepared according to the standards of Kodesh are not considered like Kodesh, and the rules of regular Cholin apply to them, that no, you can have no more than Sheni. There's never a Shlishi possible by them. And therefore, since she's a Sheni Latruma, as far as Cholin are concerned, then there's no problem with her touching the water. So the question is, Masnissin Man, Which Tana does our Mishnah follow in saying that that eventually the Chachamim decided that Chul and Shanasu, al Paras HaKodesh, do not have the status of Kodesh? The answer is Abba Sholi. That would be according to Abba Shol, the Tanya, Abba Sholim, Tvul Yoim Tchila LaKodesh. He says that Tvul Yoim is considered a Tchila, which is another word for Rishon, as far as Kodesh, L'tame Shnayim V'lifta Lechad, in the sense that if he touches Kodesh, that will be Metame the next two things, and then Pasul the last one, because by Kodesh you can go down to Revi. So he touches food of Kodesh and makes it a Sheni. The Sheni touches some other food and makes it a Shlishi. Those two are Tame, because they can be Metame something else. Then the next one that they touch becomes possible because it's the last one in the chain. It can't be Metame anything else. But only as far as Kodesh. But only as far as Kodesh, not as far as Cholim Shanasu Al Paras HaKodesh. Only as far as Kodeshim, right. But not as far as Cholim Shanasu Al Paras HaKodesh. So our Mishnah follows that opinion. You have different other opinions that we learned about in Cholin. We had possibilities. Maybe Cholin Shanasu Al Paras HaKodesh do have the status of Kodesh. Maybe they have partially the status of Kodesh. Maybe you have that Tzvul Yoim is always considered a Sheni, even as far as Kodeshim, and therefore he's only the Tam. Therefore, he only can create a Shlishi and a Revi, but not a Sheni. You had a number of different possibilities with it. Okay.
The halacha is.
The halacha is. Like our Stam Mishnah, because in general the halacha is like a Stam Mishnah that a Tvul Yoim is considered a Rishon as far as Kodesh and a Sheni as far as Cholin. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Umoidim. Now everybody agrees. This woman during these 33 or 66 days is allowed to eat meiser. The kotza lachala, they also agree that she is allowed to, if she's making dough, she's allowed to take off a piece. She's not allowed to eat truma, right? Until the end of the 40 or 80 days, right? The kotza lachala, she can take off a piece of her dough for chala, but not yet designated as chala, because once she designates it, takes it off, intending to designate it as challah. We're going to say in a second how she goes about designating it, but the problem is, if while she's handling it, she designates it as challah, then she's going to be metame it. She's a sheni v'truma. So what does she do? Umakefes. So what she does is, after she separated the piece for challah, she puts it in another container and touches that container to the rest of the dough. The word makefes, that she explains, means adjacent. So she puts the keli containing the piece of challah, adjacent, that's undesignated as challah yet, but has been separated for that purpose, she places that keli adjacent to touching the rest of the dough. Because you're supposed to... Touching. So she has... The outside of the keli is touching the dough. The point of it being, you're supposed to take challah and truma and maisu and whatever are supposed to be taken min hamukaf. They're supposed to be taken from what's all adjacent, from what's all touching. You're not supposed to have, at least on a hachila level, you're not supposed to have, let's say I have a pile of grain over here, let's say, and I have a smaller pile over here, and I'm going to say this smaller pile of truma or maisa or whatever on behalf of this bigger pile, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to have, but they're you're supposed to have this together.
Take it out to the challah.
So she took it out, then she puts it in another keli and touch and puts that keli close to the rest of the dough. Then she says this is challah. So now that way she's not touching it; she's only touching the keli. And as the Gemara is going to say, we're not worried that she might accidentally touch the challah while it's in the keli, and therefore she's accomplished everything she needs to. Another din, the imnofal meruko midam tara al kikashal truma, suppose that some of her saliva, which is an example of mashkim, of a tzvulyoim, or some of her blood of tara, falls al kikashal truma onto a loaf of bread of truma, true to her, everybody agrees that the loaf remains to her. Because, as we're going to say in the Gemara, the bodily liquids that come out of a tzvulyoim are not metame food. They're too low a degree of tumah to be metame food. Now, what happens when she finally reaches the 40th or the 80th night? Does she have to tovel in order to eat tumah? So Beit Shammai says yes. She needs tevila at that point because all this time, for the last 33 or 66 days, she's been a tevilas yom aruch. So therefore, she hasn't been thinking in terms of keeping herself tahor for truma. So it's possible that she might have accidentally become tameh without realizing it. Therefore, we make her go to the mikvah. Or Rashi says, suppose she's not a bas koyin, a wife of a koyin or whatever, then what she's tovling for Beth Shammai will still say she needs to tovel in order that the next day when she brings her korbanos, she can enter the Beth Mikdash after that. In other words, Beth Shammai is saying it's not just going to be enough to bring her korbanos, she also needs to tovel. Or Beth Hillel Oymim Enes Tzvicha Tzvila Ma'asroin, Beth Hillel says she doesn't need Tzvila at the end. As far as Truma, however, she will need it, but Rashi says she will need Tvila as far as being able to eat Kodshim later. If she wants to be able to eat Kodshim afterwards, then she needs to toggle, right?
But not Truma.
The Rambam also writes this, although it's interesting. The Rambam writes it as Yei Royally, it seems to me, where it seems to be pretty implicit in the Mishnah over here, so I don't know. So why is Yei Royally? I don't know. Okay. Anyway. Okay. So the first part of the Mishnah, we said that she's allowed to eat Meiser during these 33 or 66 days. Why? Because we have a rule that says in a Braisa, it's actually a Mishnah, that once a person has toivled from their severe level of Tumah, then they're allowed to eat Meiser Sheni. So there you go. She's toivled from her severe Tumah of the 7 or 14 days. Therefore, now she's allowed to eat Meiser Sheni.
After the
7 or 14 days. Yeah. The kotzal challah, we said that when it comes to taking challah, she's allowed to cut off the piece that she's going to use for challah, but not yet designate it. Why? Why does that work? Because before this dough has had challah taken from it, you could argue the whole thing is potentially challah. Any part of it potentially could be challah. Shouldn't it have the rules of challah? And if it has the rules of challah, then it would mean she can't touch it, being a tzvulyon. But no, it does not have the rules of challah before the challah has actually been designated. Chulin, a tevul in the challah, chulin, which is considered tevil relative to challah, because challah has not been taken from it, lav kachala domu, they do not have the status of challah, and therefore she, as a tevul yom, is allowed to handle it without a problem. The dough is not challah, and therefore she can handle it without a problem. Right? We said that afterwards she places the challah into another container and then touches that container to the rest of the dough. Why? Mitzvah litrim and amukah, the proper way of taking truma and also challah is to do it minamukah from what's adjacent. So not just in other words to have the challah. Makefes implies touching, or at least in close proximity. We said Rekoda Lashem, we said then she can designate it as challah. So what's the chiddush? Safadai Nechamina, you would have thought. Maybe she shouldn't be the one designated as challah. Nigzo Juma Osi Laminga Bam Avroi. Maybe we should make a gzeder that she should not, because then she might touch it from the outside. She might accidentally, you know, the challah is in the container over here and she'll accidentally touch it.
You could have thought to make it clear
that she shouldn't designate challah. She should put it together with the other dough and then leave it to somebody else to designate it as challah.
You could separate the dough, but you can give the designation to someone else.
Maybe, yeah. But Kamash Mon, therefore the Mishnah is telling us we're not worried. I guess you would be allowed to. Okay. The im nochol meruka, then we said if some of her saliva or blood falls on a loaf of truma, then the loaf remains to her. It's not, because we learn in a Mishnah, in the sefer tzvulyoim, mashke tzvulyoim, the liquid, the bodily liquid, like blood or saliva or what have you, of a tzvulyoim, mashke na yotin menu, or in general any liquids that come out of him, to mashke na negebe, and they have the same status as liquids that he touched. The elu ain't matamin, so neither one is able to be matame anything, because the tevul yoyim himself, neither one, meaning the liquid that he touches or the liquid that come out of his body, both have the same status. Neither of them are able to be matame anything. Chutz mi mashke hazav shu avatoma, with the exception of the liquid that come out of a zav or the other ones like a zav, like a zava, etc., which those liquids are an avatoma. In general, in other words, we have a concept midrabanan. In general, when a tamei person touches liquids, they become a rishon l'tuma. We've learned about this before. And even if the thing that made them tamei itself was a lower degree of tuma, like a sheni, they still go up and become a rishon, which is usually we think that tuma only goes downwards. It only becomes less and less in intensity. But midrabanan, you have liquids that are touched by a source of tuma become a rishon, with the exception, and the reason was because you have these mashkes zav, which is an ava truma d'araisa, and is able to be metame kalim, and therefore midrabanon, other liquids that became tame, which might be confused with them, can also be metame kalim. Therefore the kali itself becomes tame, with the exception of mashkim of a tvul yoim, as we're saying in our Gemara over here, those don't have that zera of the chachamim on them. There we have the rule that tvul yoim is not. The mashkim themselves, fine. If they were mashkim of kodshim or whatever, he's matame them. But the mashkim themselves are not able to be matame something else.
Anything else in a tvul yom, like a yoledis, a mitara, or a...
So So yeah, let us be metara is a tvuya. In other words, no. So we're saying there's a difference between a zava or a zava before they go to the mikvah during their 7 clean days or whatever. Then they're mashkimah and avatruma.
Right.
So then we said the saliva or blood or what have you that comes out of a zava or a zava or whatever is an avatruma.
Yeah.
Most other tmeim, let's say a person with tumah sheretz, let's say any touches liquid, then there, well, actually there would be a rishon l'truma daraita. But let's say, for example, you have food that was a shady l'truma, and it touches liquid. Midrabanan, those liquids become a rishon l'truma. But if a tvul yom touches liquid, they do not become a rishon l'truma. Okay. So therefore, that's what we're saying over here. That therefore, if the blood or whatever or saliva or whatever of this woman al dam toya drops on a loaf of bread, the loaf does not become tamei.
Why do we make the tfulya not becoming a rishon and the others?
Because the chachamim wanted to make a distinction in order that we should be clear what's the raisa and what's the rabban. Okay. Then we said Beit Shammai. We said that Beit Shammai says that she needs the Tovel at the end of the 40 or 80 days, and Beit Hillel said she doesn't need to. So my Benayu, what is the underlying argument between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Amar of Kinnah, Tzvul Yom Aruch, Eka Benayu. That's exactly the argument. She is a Tzvul Yom Aruch. She's been a long-term Tzvul Yom, so she's no longer thinking at that point of eating Truma, so she could conceivably have become Tomei without realizing it. So Beit Shammai is concerned about that, and Beit Hillel is not. Okay. Well, I guess we could start the last Mishnah, or we could, Okay. The Mishnah says, last Mishnah. Haroya Yom Achad Oster. We know, we've learned throughout the Masechta, we've been talking about the 7 days of Nida and the 11 days of Ziva. So what happens, a woman has a flow on the 11th day of Ziva, which means, in other words, now let's consider, as background, what would happen if then she also bleeds on the next day? She's not becoming a Zavatana. Well, that's the thing. The two don't combine together. They don't combine together because one is doing the Yemei Ziva and one is doing the Yemei Nida. Right. So what happens then if she has a flow on the 11th? The Tovel La'erev, so now, therefore, she toggles that very same evening, or Meshamsha, and she has relations with her husband. Is she able to do that? That she's completely still Tomei, she's completely still considered a Zava, but Metame and Mishka Vamoshev, both she and her husband are going to be Metame anything they sit or lie on or whatever. In other words, because he's considered a Boyal Nida. In other words, the bottom line is, Rashi says, Bishamai holds, now we know in general, if the woman had a flow during any of the other Yemei Ziva, no question, everybody would agree, she needs a clean day after that. She needs to be a Shemer Siyam Keneged Yom. Beit Shammai holds that also applies if the flow was on the 11th. The next day can never be one of the Yemei Ziva. Beit Shammai says it doesn't matter. She still needs a full day of being Shemer Siyam Keneged Yom. And like this she didn't. And like this she didn't because she only had the night. Therefore, Beit Shammai says no good. She's still considered a Zava. And therefore, her husband is Tomei from being a Boreal Zava. The Chayav and the Korban. And they're both going to be Chayav and a Korban if they did it for Shogig because... Because that's Yom Achad Oser. Yom Achad Oser, by definition, means Zava.
It cannot be any
Zava. Okay. Well, Beit Hillel say, as far as Tuma, as the Gemara is going to say, fine, we agree the husband is Tomei, as a Boyal Nidah, Boyal Zava, whatever. But as far as the Korban, Beit Hillel says, you don't require to have the extra day of Shimur, because anyway, the next day is not part of the Yemei Zava. It's the beginning of a new cycle. The beginning of the Yemei Nida.
She offer a carbon and not and still be
tamei. No. The point is, Peturim and a carbon. So therefore, Beit Hillel is going to say Peturim and a carbon. Beit Hillel says they don't have to bring a carbon because it's true they did the wrong thing and it's true they're both tamei. But as far as bringing a carbon for being boil zava, that not.
Wow.
That, because they say it's only midrabban that you say that it's only midrabban that you would say that they're tamei.
So Beit Shammai says
daraisa and Beit Hillel says that they're right. Next case, Tavla B'yom Shal Achrav, what about another case? If she tovled on the next day, so she did keep part of the day, and that's already fine, Mikseh Sayyem Kekoloi, so therefore, that's good. The problem is that, again, had it happened any earlier during the 11 days, definitely we would say she's not supposed to do that. We learned about that earlier in the Masechta. Because,
okay.
what, because there's always the possibility that later that day she may have a flow, and then it's gonna undo, then it's not a clean day anymore. So then it's gonna turn out retroactively that her tevila was no good, and if she had relations, then it turns out that it was also. But here we're talking about it was the 11th day. So let's say, so now on the 11th day she had a flow, she waited until the next morning, until sometime during the next day, then she tovled, b'shimsha es beisa, then she had relations with her husband, v'achazach rasa, later that day she had a riyah. Now the question: So what happens now? Well, does it retroactively take away? Right. Bet Shammai omer matamim mishkal v'moshe v'keturim min hakorban. So Bet Shammai here is going to say that it's midrabbanan that they're going to be tamei because the rabbanan are concerned if you're going to allow it. If you're going to say they're not tamei in this case, they may mistakenly think the same thing is true if they did the same thing any time earlier in the 11 days. And then we know for sure that not, then they'd be tamei d'oraisa. So the rabbanan also extend to the 11th and 12th days.
Why they didn't do it just on the 12th?
No. So what we're saying, again, let's recap so far. What we're saying is, and I have to stop in a second, but we'll probably redo the Mishnah tomorrow night anyway. Right. But whatever. What the Shammai is saying is that midaraisa during the first 10 of the 11 Yemei Ziva, you definitely need a Yom HaShomer, no question about it. And if it's not a full 24 hours that's clean, meaning that it was bleeding sometime during that period, then it undoes it, and then she's still considered fully a Zava Kana or Zava Gdola, as the case may be.
You need a full 24 hours
that were clean and then free of blood. Everybody agrees to that during the first 10 days. The Machlokas is about the 11th day. The Shammai is saying, Midrabbanan, you need that for the 11th day as well. Therefore, if you don't have full 24 hours, then Midrabbanan, we're going to be with Tamei then, but because it's only Midrabbanan, you can't make them bring a korban, because you can't only bring a korban from Daraisa. Bishilol would say, as the mission is going to continue, that it's not that Midrabbanan did not make any zera about that. On the other hand, the first case of the Mishnah was where she didn't even begin counting a clean day. She just right away at night, before even waiting for the daylight hours, she went to the mikveh that night. So then the Shammai says that doesn't count at all. That's not even, then they would say, fine, on a daraisa level, as long as you had part of a clean day the next day, then fine, that's good enough. Given that the next day is the 12th day, it's not part of the days of Zava anymore, it's the beginning of a new cycle. So the Shammai would say, fine, if you had at least part of the day, then fine, at least on a daraisa level, she's not a Zava anymore. But on the bottom level, she would be. But if you didn't even have any part of the day, all you had was part of the night, then Bet Shammai says that doesn't even count at all. Even on a daraisa level, she's still a zava.
How much part of the day does he need?
Any point, which is the same cool. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Right? As long as after Netzachama.
Bethilo
would say no. Or Bethilo Emu Harez a Gargaron. Bethilo says the person who acts that way is a glutton. In other words, Rashi says, Mamahar Lachter. He's too quick, and he may be doing an Avera. Because he may, if he, like this, in this case, the Tzilla would hold, technically it's Mutter. There's no even Issu Drabbanan on it. However, if a person does that, he's liable to do the same thing earlier during the 11 days, and if he were to do that, then it would be an Issu D'oraisa. Because then, again, if you don't have full 24 hours that were clean, then you have a problem. Then, if she tovled earlier in the day, if she was a Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom, and tovled on the day that she's Shomer, and then bled later that day, retroactively, her tevila is no good.
Did she bled on the 11th day?
No, not the 11th.
Why
day.
Not the 11th?
That, because the day after the 11th is not part of the 11-day cycle anymore. So therefore, Hillel would say like, there's no question, if let's say she bled on the 9th day of the cycle, there's no question she needs the 10th as a clean day. And there's no question that if later on during the 10th day she bleeds, then it undoes the count. And even the fact that she went to the mikveh earlier on the 10th day doesn't help, and it turns out retroactively the tevilah was no good, and if they had relations, it turned out that retroactively they're tamei and they have to bring korban and all that. The Shammai would say, therefore, midrabbanan, we're going to extend the same thing, the same rule to the 11th day, even though the 11th day is different than, let's say, the 9th day, in that the day after it is not part of the Yemei Ziva anymore. The only thing that Shammai would say is there's a difference. Midaraisa, with all the other days, you need full 24 hours, night and day. With the 11th day, all you need is the following night on a daraisa level, and then she could go to the mikveh first thing the following morning. The Tula would say you don't even need the night on a daraisa level, only the rabbanan. Rabbi Silva would say, once it came to daytime, Bishama would say, fine, and on a Daraisa level, she did everything she had to. The Rabbanon was still going to be Matami then. So therefore, she needs the full 12th day to be Torah. Bishama Hillel was saying, there's no Gzera de Rabbanon even on that. However, it's wrong of him to do that, because then what if in the future he does the same thing when she bleeds on the 8th day or the 9th day or whatever, some other day in the middle of the cycle, and then he might then you'd have a problem Daraisa. Okay, so we'll continue. We'll continue. Of course, yeah. But we'll continue the Mishnah tomorrow, and we'll get more into this. Okay.